This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And today we're talking with Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators, getting an update on some of the things they have going on. Matt, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me, Kyle.
So, first of all, just do a quick once over for people that are new or haven't been paying quite as much attention until recent days. Tell us a little bit about kind of the background of DTO, how it got started, and how long it's been around.
DTO is a local nonprofit entity. It's been in existence since 1968, so over 50 years. It represents forest products manufacturers, timberland owners, loggers, tribes, small woodlands owners, and regular community members that support multiple use, sustained yield management of forests, and the economies that it supports in counties like Douglas County, which has always been benefited by and dependent upon the active management of forests.
And how large is your group?
We have about 150 members, ranging from individual members to large companies like Rosebrook Forest Products and Sierra Pacific Industries.
And what kinds of things do you do in terms of the course of the year?
We host monthly board meetings for the DTO board to discuss various matters affecting forest management, from policy to funding and local circumstances. We have an annual membership meeting. We now have monthly public breakfast meetings that I can talk about a little bit more. We have timber educational tent. It used to be a tent. We're trying to make it into something else out at the Douglas County Fairgrounds every year. The last couple of years, DTO has been primarily focused on just getting information out to the public about the Archer Creek fire, what happened in the fire, what happened after the fire, and in the path ahead for forest recovery.
So obviously, it's been an interesting and bumpy few years. Combine a pandemic with all the fires, and there's probably a lot to analyze.
A lot to analyze. We slowed down in some areas. We sped up in other areas. We're getting back to some semblance of normalcy, but adapting to changed circumstances. And between pandemic effects on the economy and then certainly the fire behavior that we've been seeing lately, it really has changed the focus or added to the focus of DTO beyond traditional forest management, but into the realm of fire and what to do about that.
And many of your members are really facing almost lifetime challenges with how much land burned in the Archie Creek fire.
The Archie Creek fire in 2020 affected, about 40% of that fire was large industrial timber landowners, and it eviscerated their land, their forests of all age classes. So in Archie Creek, you had trees that were, just ready to be harvested, and then you had younger and younger and younger stands down to seedlings. And so it affects the inventory of logs going into the mill for the next 40 years, and so that puts more pressure on federal, state, tribal, county forest landowners to be able to fill that gap for the next 40 years to make sure there's not a shortage of logs coming out of these forests.
And for the lands that were not impacted by the fire, whatever their ownership is, it makes their health and vitality even more important.
Absolutely. I think everyone is taking the threat of fire more seriously these days. It's getting worse. The trend is getting worse. Our firefighters are telling us that. And with the increasing number of hundreds of thousands of acres of standing air-dried firewood on the federal estate, that risk isn't just adjacent landowners. The sparks from and embers blowing from distant fires can ignite miles and miles away. And so the landscape is a challenge for the future, and we need to be bringing more tools, more activity to be able to address fire, to contain it, and to reduce its intensity.
Now, obviously, you took a lot of interest in the Archie Creek fire for a great number of reasons, even some more personal. And following all the research and pictures and stories and things that you put together, I understand there's something coming to the museum soon. Tell us about that.
Yeah, DTO is working with the Douglas County Museum and Museum Foundation on an Archie Creek Fire exhibit. Very straightforward pictures, stories, video, intended to give the viewer a sense of what it was like during that fire experience, either as a first responder or as someone fleeing, as an evacuee. We've got some pictures never really before seen or published. Lots of good information, and it's almost done. You can go see it now. There'll be an official opening of the exhibit in the coming weeks, but it's a multimedia type exhibit, and I really encourage anyone to get out there and see it just to kind of be engulfed in those images of crisis and catastrophe.
And for people who've lived here for a long time, who later that year went up there, they encountered a scene unlike anything they ever expected to see.
And they continue to. And I think that is that long-term grieving and recovery process, whether you were directly affected or just a local resident, that area up there does not resemble anything like it did before the fire. Even now, springtime comes, you'll see some greening up, but it's not 80, 100, 400-year-old conifers. It's scotch broom, blackberry, tansy, basically shrubs and scrubs that are repopulating the side of those forests and really changing the function altogether. And you can hike Fall Creek, Susan Creek, North Umpqua Trail, any of these places, and it's a very different experience. It's a very different place. And I think it's important for people to see the impact of high-intensity fires on the landscape.
And for people who lost their home, lost land in the fire, many of them losing practically all their possessions, there's been no quick fix there either.
No quick fixes. There's homes that have been rebuilt up there for people who were fully insured and ready to rebuild. Others, a large percentage of residents up there were either uninsured or underinsured and have struggled to rebuild what they had, or maybe they were in a rental situation and the landowner has been unable or uninterested in rebuilding those rental units. I know a lot of people are waiting for the outcome of litigation over the ignition of the fire and waiting for possible settlement of that. So a lot of factors, and there's just a lot of people that are still displaced, some of them permanently, and who've left the area, just unable to rebuild the life they had up the North Umpqua.
And so this exhibit really shows something that is very unique in terms of never having happened in this area before.
No, certainly in recorded history, there has never been a fire of that magnitude in the Umpqua Basin. You'd have to go back 10,000 years to the eruption of Mount Mazama to see, anything on that scale in that forest. And we really didn't have any major forest fires in the Upper Umpqua Basin, North Umpqua, South Umpqua, until the late 80s, early 90s. And now we have them quite regularly. And so it's a different trend. It's a different experience here. I mean, most people who grew up here in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't a lot of smoke. There wasn't a lot of fire. It seemed like it was an invincible forest, and it's not. It's susceptible to drought. It's susceptible to fuel loading. It's susceptible to lack of management. And we have to take all those factors into consideration to manage the type of forest we want to have for us and for future generations.
And once it was clear just the level of devastation, from my vantage point, it happened so quickly you couldn't even write the news story in time. I mean, it was just a rapid-moving, rapid-changing course of, 24, 48 hours. And then beyond, as more work took place.
I think over 80% of the fire's devastation occurred in the first 48 hours when most people had no idea the scale of what was happening up there. And we just thought it was another, you know, for those that weren't first responders, we just thought it was another fire, you know, another maybe 10,000, maybe 20,000 acre fire, and had no idea that 100,000 acres had already burned before, you know, the first stories were even written about it.
Wow. More talk more about that and other topics as well. Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators, the interview a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1246 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1. Katie Atkins from the Douglas Education Service District on tomorrow's program. We're going to talk about the school-based mental health cohort they are putting together and some mental health help for the area. That is upcoming. So that's on tomorrow's program. Matt Hill from the Douglas Timber Operators covering a lot of things about the organization. We've been spending a lot of time talking about the Archie Creek situation and the things after that. But there have been a lot of other things going on as well, and I was caught off guard, I think, a week or so ago when the press release came out. The DTO's monthly breakfast meetings were coming back, and I sort of stared at that for press release for a moment, and I'm like, oh, yeah, they used to do that. And, you know, one of those things that went away during a pandemic and all of that, but you've resumed those.
We have for the first time in exactly 3 years, and today was the first one we've done in that period. We had it down at Bricks downtown, full house. So we're going to have to find a bigger room, which is a good thing. But we traditionally have hosted these public breakfast meetings to bring in guest speakers to talk about topics of interest, take questions. And just be a venue for the public to learn more about forest management and the many, many issues that are involved there. So it'll range from fire to fire preparedness to the federal perspective to the litigation perspective to science. We brought in entomologists before and just try to get into the weeds of forest management because it is so important to this county, and it's important that our population has a good understanding of the facts.
And post Archie Creek, obviously that just adds one more layer to the whole issue.
Yeah, we spent a great deal of our time today just talking about fire. I had a slideshow of before and after pictures of Archie Creek, many of which will be in the Douglas County Museum exhibit, and talking about where do we go from here. We can look back at Archie Creek for a long time, but the next step is really to pivot into the future and determine how do we manage forests differently? How do we manage fire differently? How do we prepare the landscape to be resilient for fire? And I am encouraged that those conversations are happening at a national level, at a local level. All of the partners are in the room examining that and bringing every tool that we can to make our forests more resilient to fire.
And one aspect of that as well was what happened to the Rock Creek Catchery?
Yeah, it's still in the same condition it was after the fire. The fire burned every building except the Rockhead building, which DTO had worked with our industry partners on. So that's still there, but functionally, it's just a bunch of concrete pools that are able to be used to collect fish or to bring fish back. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is still working on various options for reconstruction or not reconstructing the hatchery, which I understand that they'll be circulating for public comment and discussion in the coming weeks and months. That hasn't stopped, you know, everyone who's interested in sharing their opinions with ODFW. There's strong support from local fishing groups, from Indian tribes and others to rebuild Rock Creek better than it ever was, with the best scientific equipment available to deal with water quality issues up there. But of course, there's other legal issues. There's litigation over the summer steelhead program at Rock Creek. So determining what you're building the hatchery for is going to be an important part of this process.
And one thing to consider as well is there's all the debate and discussion about exactly what to do. And we're going to have to wait out that process. And once some decision is made, if it's rebuilt and if something continues, that's going to take a considerable amount of time itself. So we're looking a few years up the road, even at maybe the scenario that you would be happiest with.
It's going to be several years, indeed. I mean, to rebuild something like that is not, it's not like building a tool shed or something. And it's a complex set of buildings and equipment and piping and electrical and pumps and everything. And if they started today, it would probably take a couple of years. But my sense is that it'll probably take another year to make a full decision on what direction they're going to go. In the meantime, you know, they are trying to maintain the hatchery programs as best they can. Fish are being collected at Rock Creek. They're being transported to Coal River's hatchery on the Upper Rogue River, where they're hatched. The juveniles grown, brought back to Rock Creek for acclimation, and then release either in Rock Creek or in the South Umpqua if they're destined there. So they're kind of hobbling along given the infrastructure they have, but the infrastructure is crumbling everywhere. I mean, down at Coal River's hatchery on the Rogue, you know, for months and months and months, they were operating off backup diesel generators because their power line failed. And so if the generator fails, everything fails and fish die. And it's a real challenge. So I think we need to look regionally at how to rebuild this infrastructure for the future and make it the best possible for people who fish and for the fish in the river to make sure that we're not losing those resources. And the state of Oregon has been focused on hatcheries and maintaining a stock of fish in these rivers, in this river, in the Umpqua, for, you know, over 100 years. So this is nothing new, but we can bring new science, new partnerships to it to make it better than it ever was.
And the process really is going to be not only construction there, if that takes place, but you're really backing up your infrastructure back to the road, or who knows where you've got to start from.
Road, power, water, the Rock Creek hatchery that existed prior to the fire, which was Rock Creek 3.0, I would describe it, you know, had the ability to pull water from Rock Creek or to pump it from the North Umpqua in a pipe up to the hatchery. So looking at those are water treatment, cooling, filtration, ozone treatment, things like that are all on the table. So there's a lot of factors, but I'm excited about you know, the level of resources and smart people who brought their ideas to the table to make Rock Creek 4.0 much better than 3.0.
When you look at all these issues, especially as they impact the Umpqua Valley, do you feel like all sides are listening to each other and cooperating maybe a little better given what we've all gone through?
I'm smiling. And no, they're not. They're in court suing each other. I think for many of them, they're farther apart than they ever were. And it's hard because, you know, I think all the people that have strong feelings on different sides of the hatchery issue, in the real world, we're friends and we get along and we're fishing alongside each other in the river. But these issues become a little more political and philosophical. And I hope that the process brings people together to find positive movement for both perspectives. I've been very heartened to see the 5 Western Oregon Indian tribes weighing in on this, bringing their perspective, which is traditional ecological knowledge. It's 10,000 years or more of harvesting and consuming fish in the Umpqua Basin and their needs and their interests. And I think they bring a real moderating sense to what is otherwise a very polarized debate.
People want to find out more about this issue and the work of DTO. How do they get connected with you?
Our website is dougtimber.org. My email is matt@dougtimber.org. send me a message. I'll answer.
And again, one of those monthly meetings coming up again?
Every month we'll have the schedule posted on our website, DougTimber.org, and we can put you on our distribution list and send you a reminder every month.
All right, Matt Hill, Executive Director of the Douglas Timber Operators, thanks for coming in this afternoon.
Thanks, Scott.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.